General public is welcome. No drugs, alcohol, or pets are allowed. General admission is $7, and 5 and under are free. And 60 and over is just $3. And gates will open at 9 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Dance competition begins at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Saturday and 12 noon on Sunday. Free Friday night social at 7 p.m. on Friday, naturally, hosted by the Ganawagi Cultural Center, and handicap facilities are available. The powwow office number is open from 9 a.m. Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday to Friday, and the number is 450-632-8667. So again, that is the Echoes of a Proud Nation powwow, which is taking place this coming weekend. And I am going to be in attendance too, because I just love a very good powwow, and I love the dancing, and I love all the great great music that I hear, especially a lot of the drummers. A lot of my friends are going to be there, so I'm looking forward to it. And
this is Radio Freethinker, and we have sympathy for the devil.
Myself, I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year, stole many a man's soul and faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure the pilot washed his hands and sealed his fate. Meet you, hope you guess my name. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game. Stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was a time for a change. Killed the Tsar and his ministers, Anastasia screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a generous rank, when the blitzkrieg raged and the bodies stank. Pleased to meet you, hope you guess my name. Oh yeah, I was puzzling you with the nature of my game. Oh yeah. Watch with glee while your kings and queens fought for tender cates for the god they made. I shouted out, who killed the Kennedys? When after all, it was you and me. Let me please introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I lay traps for troubadours who get killed before they reach. You is the nature of my name.
And you're listening to Radio Free Thinker on CITR 101.9 FM. That was Sympathy for the Devil. And I am Ethan, your free-thinking historian.
And I'm Don, the political science philosopher.
I'm Elon, the computer science nerd.
And I'm Rob, cognitive psychologist and culinary gourmand. Speaking of food, I hear that some interesting things happened today in history.
This day in history is very important in food. In 1937, actually not this day, this week in history, 1937, Spam was invented, the famous lunching meat. Anyone who's a fan of Monty Python will know Spam, 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 Spam.
Not enough, guys.
Also on this day, in this week in history, in 1928, the most important invention to food since anything.
It's the greatest thing since...
Sliced bread was invented for the first time by the Chillicothe Baking Company in Missouri, described as the greatest step forward in baking since sliced bread was wrapped.
Wow.
Now, of course, people had sliced bread before then.
They had knives, they had bread. Someone must have figured it out.
Exactly. But this was the first time you could buy pre-sliced bread.
Ooh, sounds like a luxurious item. I always thought the avocado slicer was the greatest invention in food. But I guess it's a controversial subject.
The cheese knife.
You slice avocados?
Or what is it, the scooper?
I thought it was like pineapple.
There's a special way to get this pit out of the avocado.
Anyways, more on food later.
Yes. Actually, one more thing, just for all those people who think religion is so important. In the United States, in this day, this week in history, 1955, they added the phrase, "In God we trust," to U.S. currency. So before 1955, I guess the Americans didn't trust God, but they trusted gold or some other such thing. Speaking of religion...
It is my turn to speak, and I'm going to tell you about an amazing new TV show coming out on Turkish television, which is probably going to be one of the biggest ratings hits, I have a feeling. Here's the tagline. What happens when you put a Muslim imam, a Christian priest, this isn't a joke by the way, a Christian priest, a rabbi, and a Buddhist monk in a room with 10 atheists? Well, Turkish television station Kanal T hopes the answer is a rating success. Because they're launching a game show where the point of the game is that all of these religious people are going to try to convert the atheists into their religion. And whoever could convince an atheist to go to their religion wins a prize. And the prize, a pilgrimage to a holy site of
Christian religion.
So this is like
brainwashing for dollars?
What happens if they don't convert?
Yeah, do they get a special prize if they manage to get one of the religious people to see reason? And
yeah, I don't know if...
Prize?
So they're assuming, basically this is a quote from the executive, Seyhan Soylu. He says, "We're giving the biggest prize in the world, the gift of belief in God. We don't approve of anyone being an atheist. God is great, and it doesn't matter which religion you believe in. The important thing is to believe." So I think they're very certain that these atheists are just people who have lost their way, and this show is actually going to be a great show because not only will it get ratings, but it'll help these people find the correct path. To
I think they're going to assume that they're going to convert to Muslims
So you mean none of them are going to become Raelian, maybe? You know, the Great Lizard, Scientology?
Belief in God. I mean, what about the Buddhists, from my understanding?
Yeah, where did they find an evangelical Buddhist? I mean, like, when did they believe in a God?
Or Jainists.
I mean, I think it just really...
What about Zoroaster? What about him?
Well, here's the question. Okay, let's pretend that all makes sense, right? But let's say that I'm a religious person. I just really want to go to Mecca or Rome. I've just been dying to go there. And I figure, hey, this is a great way for me to pretend to convert. How do they know whether I'm truly an unbeliever or not?
So actually, Don, glad you asked. At the bottom of the article it said, "A team of theologians will ensure that the atheists are truly non-believers and are not just seeking fame or a free holiday." So they've got that's what I thought was funny. It's not a team of psychologists who are, you know, experts in determining if someone is lying by knowing the different signs of, like, someone sweating too much or whatever. No, it's going to be a group of theologians that are probably going to ask them, "Do you know what happened on page 32 of our book?" And they'll be like, "I kind of do know." Oh, lying.
Elon, you of little faith, you shouldn't understand how this works. A psychologist could be fooled by the devil, but a man of God has God on his side, and he will know.
Do the atheists get extra points for converting the religious
That's what I'd like to know. Well, the thing is, the article that I was reading, actually, I don't... Well, yeah, the article that I was reading about this, they were actually insulting the show, but they were insulting the show for a completely opposite reason. They were saying they think this show is in bad taste because it cheapens religion, and it makes religion into... this is insulting for... What about the atheists out there? I'm pretty insulted that this whole show is trying to convince people that... Like, imagine if they had a similar show where it was, like, converting Jews to Christianity and saying, being a Jew is crazy, and you should convert to Christianity. Imagine what kind of stink the Jewish lobby would put up. I think this is an important thing that the Turkish atheists should really be offended about.
Well, and I'm thinking, too, what happens if you're not converted? What happens when you leave the studio? Is it like one bus goes to Mecca, the other one goes to,
Disneyland.
I don't know. Yeah. No, more like, you know, long knives and, you know, the infidel shall be purged from our midst.
You know, Israel's a beautiful country, so even if you're not converted, it might be useful to just pretend to be converted just so you could go, you know, have a nice visit at a tropical place. Well, I guess not tropical.
And then they'll say, yes, the religion converts another heathen, and then you can be like, nope, sorry, I just wanted the prize.
Although, of course, you know, if you think about it, I mean, Israel's had, Jerusalem, not exactly known as the most peaceful place in the world. At most of the Mecca purges, usually something goes wrong, and there are people who are trampled to death in their religious fervor. Rome, well, you know, the mafia. So I'm not really sure if any of these places would be really great holiday locations otherwise.
I think the best religion to convert to in this case then would maybe be to Pastafarianism. If you convert to the Flying Spaghetti Monster, maybe you go to Spaghetti Factory over in Gastown.
Ooh.
That'd be a great religious pilgrimage. Maybe we should
do
that after the show.
Where you get touched by his noodly appendage.
Or at least you'll get free ice cream.
May the sauce of reason.
So I guess reality TV is now going to ruin religion and atheism as well. They've already ruined, marriage.
I guess we really, really have to question whether it's reality TV anymore. That was called into question when it first came out, but now really.
Well, we'll see if every single of the 10 atheists ends up converting, and the only interesting thing is to see which religion did they convert to, then I'm going to be a little bit skeptical that this show was really real, because a real atheist... Well, I mean, we do have the facts on our side, so it's probably pretty hard to get convinced otherwise. But, hey, I'm up for someone giving me a shot.
The pressure of religious leaders in a place as conservative and extremely religious as Turkey.
Hey, if someone offered for me to be on the show, I'd go.
Well, Turkey is the most, secular state in the Middle East.
Not for long. Not for long, Ethan.
No, actually, you know, it's funny, too, because you do mention that. I mean, Turkey prides itself on having a very strong separation of church and state, of trying to be a very secular, Western-facing type nation. But the last couple elections, they've elected more pro-Muslim type governments, and the military tried to step in before and prevent them from taking office because, hey, listen, if we start this, it's going to be a slippery slope to becoming a far more religious, fundamentalist type nation. The last election, the military stepped back and they said, okay, we'll let them in there. Since then, what have we got? Well, we had the creationist version, Islamic version of creationism. We have this game show, among other things. So I don't know. I'm not a big fan of military dictatorships, but...
In this case, Radio Free Thinker endorses it.
I look forward to seeing the numerous YouTube parodies that will no doubt crop up soon.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with an interview.
Do people feel like making some noise tonight?
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, Cookie Monster's favorite radio station.
Good night, Chicago! Brutal!
Okay, we're back. And this interview is with Steve Lundquist, who is the creator of a website called Facts Not Fantasy, operating out of Florida. And let's go right to it.
Okay, so joining us now on Radio Free Thinker, we have the creator of Facts Not Fantasy, Steve Lundquist. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm quite excited to be here.
So tell us a bit about why you created Facts Not Fantasy.
Well, I'm a frequent contributor to Dr. Platt's Bad Astronomy blog, and one of the issues that he kind of puts up a lot of posts about is the anti-vaccination thing, as well as kind of the whole teach creationism in schools. And we noticed that a lot of people would make the same posts over and over again that had been repeatedly refuted, One of the other bloggers there by the name of Todd W. and another guy, Ivan Threeman, would end up repeatedly posting the same thing. So the three of us got together and we decided, why not make it a resource for people to literally copy-paste, so that as soon as Dr. Plake put up a blog about either the anti-vax movement or evolution, we would be able to make that the first post. You know, before you make all your tired old same arguments, please read this first.
Right. And you guys focus on the anti-vaccination movement and evolution. Why those two particular points?
They seem to be the ones that are in the news the most right now, particularly on Dr. Plake's blog. There's a lot of, shall we say, woo that is discussed out there, and you know, we could probably make a giant page, and we just don't have the manpower to address, you know, all the silly type of notions that are floating around on the internet. So we just picked those two. I think between the three of us, those are the ones that we have the most interest in personally, as well as maybe the most just experience behind, and kind of a little bit of education as well as a little bit of personal experience.
Mm-hmm. And how has the response been from the skeptical movement?
Well, first of all, it's just kind of us three guys so far that have put this up. We have, you know, I've been tracking hits to the site and things like that, and it's small, I would say, at this point. Hopefully, as time progresses, we'll get more and more. One of the things I've been doing is actually been kind of walking into the lion's den and going to some of these Age of Autism sites and, you know, the Discovery Institute sites, and trying to get my links to the specific arguments in their blogs. Not having a whole lot of luck in that regard as far as them approving my comments.
Yeah. Do you think you're going to be winning over any of the believers of, like, the autism causing being caused by vaccines? Do you think that's a cause we can win?
It would have to be a multi-pronged approach in that regard. You know, and this is one of the small prongs in that particular regard. In my neck of the woods, I live down in the panhandle of Florida, and wouldn't you know it, there has been a whooping cough outbreak in one of the local towns. And so I made a link on the local newspaper in the story that broke this whooping cough outbreak. And a lot of it was actually positive feedback from people in the local community. You know, we try not to be too disrespectful to the anti-vax / pro-disease movement. You know, it's kind of walking that fine line of, you know, really trying to educate them as well as trying to deprogram some of the things that they have come to believe and hold steadfast.
Yeah, I think a lot of them, their intentions are good. They're just misinformed. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we mentioned in our list of bullet points is that vaccines aren't totally safe. It's a fact of life that, you know, you cannot guarantee 100% that someone will not have a bad reaction or quite possibly even a lethal reaction. However, you have to weigh that against the benefit of it. You know, the chance that human beings are very poor at judging risk. So the chance that's one in a million of having a very horrible reaction to a vaccine is offset by the one in a thousand chance that the disease that you're vaccinating against may cripple you or scar you for life.
Right.
And so we're trying to kind of show that we you know, and also show it's actually as unfortunate as it is. There was you know, an outbreak of mumps and rubella in Southern California back in the, I believe it was the late 90s, which kind of resulted as a loss of that herd immunity. And we have a nice table there showing, you know, hey, MMR, you know, thousands upon thousands of people got it back in the 50s. They introduced the vaccine. You can see how the numbers start decreasing until, you know, there's only one or two deaths per year until that outbreak. in Southern California, there was 30 and 40 people who died from MMR.
And that's basically where the movement started, was concern about the MMR vaccine.
Yes, which is rather, I don't want to use the word humorous, but, you know, they blame it on the thimerosal in vaccines, which MMR never had.
Yeah, that's
so. Just basic facts being incorrect. You know, you have talking heads or the celebrity group speaking about these sort of things when they have zero background in it, and people listen to them. And you know, I don't want to go to my auto mechanic if I should need surgery. So why do we listen to the celebrities? Kind of a human brain malfunction, or even, you know, just misplaced authorities.
Mm-hmm. On that topic, so who would you recommend for concerned citizens to go to get accurate information about these pseudosciences?
I have found that the James Randi Educational Foundation is a great place to go, and if you have questions... they have a great number of people there who are on both sides of it, many issues. And you can ask a question there, and you will get people who will reply to you. The task, though, on anyone who is concerned is to use kind of that skeptic's toolkit, the baloney detection kit, which was popularized by Carl Sagan, to really truly evaluate the information that you're given. You know, I've created this Facts Not Fantasy website dealing with vaccines and dealing with evolution. I am not a doctor, nor am I a biological scientist. I have, however, applied the baloney detection kit to information that I'm gathering and placing up on that website. I do have, thankfully, someone who is in the medical field, one of the contributors, Todd W., he's in the medical field, so he's kind of the guy that has spearheaded the anti-vax rebuttals. And Ivan Threeman, he is in the biological field, so he's spearheaded a bit of the evolution website, as well as getting some information from Dr. Shermer from the skeptic.org site.
Sounds like you got a lot of great resources there at your disposal.
Yeah, and, you know, the website is, you know, really their product. I'm just the typing monkey, as I like to call it.
So what are your plans for the future of Facts Not Fantasy?
Really, since it's such a young website, we have a huge future ahead of us, I hope. Really, just to drive more traffic there. We have a blog site as the front page where I like to post information and news stories that have come up regarding either evolution or vaccines. And as a third category, autism. My daughter is on the autism spectrum herself. We do vaccinate her, though. And, you know, so as a dad, as well as just a concerned human being, I like to highlight information that people can go to on those particular subjects. And I do that kind of Monday through Friday. And then while I am doing the news search, I also look for places where I can go. And if I see a story where someone has posted about the link to vaccines and autism, or about a school board wanting to teach creationism or intelligent design, I can point them to our website to try to get more traffic and get that public discourse about those issues more and more in the open.
Wow, that's fantastic. And thanks so much for doing this interview and for maintaining such a great resource for skeptics out there. And
thank you.
I hope that in the future we can chat again.
Yeah, I'd enjoy that tremendously.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You too. Bye-bye.
To 50 million fables, they call me the Seeker.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a big sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
Okay, and we're back on Radio Free Thinker on CITR. And we got a new topic here for you. Have anyone ever heard of organic food?
I've heard lots about organic food.
I know it's expensive.
Isn't organic food food that's not inorganic, like anything that's not salt?
Well,
apparently it's not made of cement.
Ooh.
So, well, Canada has just passed a new law regulating organic food and what qualifies as organic food.
Yeah, so the Canada Food Inspection Agency is responsible for this new law. And basically, what it means, what it says is that the organic label, and any label that you put on food with the words organic, organically grown, you know, that kind of thing, it's only for food that has 95% organic content. And then it goes on at some length to describe in detail what it means by that. And you can also get the Canada Organic stamp for food that is completely organic, things like produce that were completely organically grown, not food that has multiple ingredients, but something that is sort of like a pure ingredient.
So I guess just...
Before this, the thing that was interesting about this is that there was only voluntary compliance with organic food standards, and this varied from province to province. This is the first time that we have had a Canada-wide law about organic food and how you label it. And also, the foods were not... The standards for it were not consistent, and basically anyone could slap the word organic on their food, no matter how organic or not the food really was. And this was used to justify increases in price and things like that.
We should probably clarify what exactly organic food is.
Yeah, so I've heard that term used in so many things. I mean, is it not genetically modified? Is it sustainable? Is it local?
Well, if you have produce, for example, like lettuce is lettuce, right? I don't understand how you could have but I mean, that's why you're going to tell us about it.
One of the major points of organic food is the use of only, I suppose you could say, non-chemical treatments.
Without pesticides or
without
artificial
pesticides, without
fertilizers.
Being sprayed, no artificial modifications of how things are grown or things like that.
It's important to note that those are quote-unquote artificial, which I think is a little hard.
Yeah.
So if you have there, one of the things I know they use for an insecticide is they use ladybugs, because ladybugs are natural animals in the theory. But of course, if you start introducing ladybugs into environments where they're not natural, does that make them inorganic or organic?
It's still sort of vague, slippery language that you know, might allow a couple of things to slip through that shouldn't be allowed to slip through. But the point is that there is a sort of intuitive understanding of what organic means, such that, you know, animals are allowed to roam free if they, you know, if they can. They're not fed other animals or
things like
that.
So it's a very loose definition.
Yeah.
Food that's created, like the way at least you're presenting it, sounds like you're saying food that was created in a nice way.
From what I've seen, I asked a number of people what they thought about organic food, and there was no consensus. People are saying all sorts of these things, and when I looked through the legislation to try and find the actual legal definition of organic, I couldn't actually find it. I'm not sure it's accessible.
Well, I looked at a great resource called Quackwatch, and they had information on the USAID, which is the United States Agricultural Department, which is the equivalent of, like, I guess, the CFIA.
Yes, and actually food that is considered organic by the USAID is considered to be equivalent as a certification to this new CFIA certification.
Well, the interesting thing is, according to them and other like food agencies, organic food is not considered better in quality, appearance, or safety. It's and they say that no claim can legally be made to say that it is. It's just all about production.
Well, and again, I think that's where we get really fuzzy as to what does organic. I know a lot of people think organic food is again small family farm that's organic. You know,
yeah,
where
it seems to me that organic is often mixed up and conflated with a lot of more carefully defined positions, such as locally grown produce, non-genetically modified food, things like that. things that are sort of subsets of this nebulous, vague definition of organic.
Right. I think actually Ethan's point is really interesting, because I think a lot of us have this like intuitive understanding, like, oh, if this food was made without pesticides, that must mean it's better than food that was made with pesticides. But there must be some reason why they're using these pesticides in the first place, right?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, you look at the advertising for organic food, and it very heavily implies that organic food is better for you because in some way it is healthier,
so
more natural.
Ethan was telling me something interesting about the...
Yes, thank you, Elon. Well, it turns out that some of these pesticides, the potential of getting it in your system is very, very, very small. But even if you do, it's actually might be beneficial, because they do kill microorganisms and possible other contaminants. So it's not really a huge concern. In fact, I would be more concerned about eating food that hasn't been treated with antibiotics. That's just my opinion,
exactly.
Though.
Then the food is going to have bacteria and other... Yeah.
Well, and if you look at as far as chemical pollutants in our environment go, I mean, right now we're talking to these mics that are sprayed with plastics, and you know there are carpets in your house that emit fumes. So I mean, as far as being polluted by inorganic elements or artificial elements, we get it all over the place. If anything, inside of an apple, be it an organic or inorganic, is going to be safe one way or the other.
Well, the outside of the apple might not be exempt from that. I mean, there is something to be said about that organic farmers often use techniques and methods of growing that the larger companies might not. For instance, have you ever bitten into an apple and it has that layer of wax on it? Organic apples might have less wax, might have no wax. It's, you know, a matter of personal preference, but there are still differences in them that might impact how well you enjoy the food. But
which gets
as to
us
the
back,
health,
which gets
I'm not
us back
sure.
to the original thing is,
exactly.
I mean, organic in itself is so ill-defined. But going with Elon's health issues, which I think is probably the crux of it, right? I mean, genetically modified food, everyone hates genetically modified food. But if you live in southern Sahara deserts where there's little water and there's lots of salt in the earth, a genetically modified crop that can grow there, feed your family, how is that less healthy than starving to death?
Not to mention, I mean, the idea of genetically modified food being bad. Well, sorry, we've been genetically modifying food for thousands of years through crossbreeding different types of crops.
Right. Well, this is a pretty fascinating debate. We're just about out of time, but of course, you can find links to the original article on the CBC at our webpage. We'll also post some links to Quackwatch. It has some great information as well. So, do we have a quote to go out on?
Yes, actually, I've got one here, originally by Douglas Adams from The Hitchhiker's Guide. Now I'm going to change this a little bit. This is an intelligent design person talking to God. Now, it is such a bizarre, improbable coincidence that anything so mind-boggling useful as the eye could have evolved by chance, and that some thinkers have chosen to see it as a final and clinching proof for the non-existence of God. The argument goes something like this. I refuse to prove that I exist, says God, for proof denies faith, and without faith I am nothing. But, says man, the eye is a dead giveaway, isn't it? It couldn't have evolved by chance. It proves you exist. And so, therefore, by your own argument, you don't exist. QED. Oh, dear, says God. I hadn't thought of that. And promptly vanishes in a poof of logic.
And for those of you who are not in the know, the eye is a replacement for the Babel fish in that quote.
Yes, the Babel fish. Well, before we go, I just want to quickly remind our listeners, Vancouver Skeptics in the Pub is happening on July 14th, Tuesday, at 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. at the Railway Club. And hopefully we'll see some of you guys there. And that pretty much ends our show. So I'm Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don, eyes open, minds on.
Elon saying bye.
This is Rob saying goodbye. And if you have any comments for us, please email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could, the only place that could possibly help me.
Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station.